so many people listening will resonate with that sort of people pleasing energy. Like, if I say this, are they going to think that? Or that person didn't smile at me on the school run. Oh my God, was it because I didn't reply? Or did I reply to the wrong? When I've been researching you, I get the feeling that you used to be in that place quite a lot and now you're not. Tell me how you changed it.
Oh my God. So yes, hugely, sometimes still, but much, much less. But I mean, off the scale. I mean, my friends take the piss out of me so much. Like, no one hates being told off more than me. I was the best person to be naughty with at school. I went to an all-girls boarding school, but it was a nice one. I had that actually gave me confidence. So I'm so sad that you had an awful time. It's such a formative time in your life. It's 7 years and it really impacts you. So I'm sure that some of those fuzzy balls are from that. So yeah, I was a massive people pleaser, but I just never got caught. You know, if you want to go and have a cigarette down at the sports field, take Cherry. Because she'll know the rota of the matrons. I'm like a guard dog. It was the same at university. I remember being late for one of the lectures at university. And the rule was, if you were late, even for 1 minute, you had to stand outside.
Oh my God, that is brutal.
Really? Well, you weren't allowed in. And I remember turning up and there was this little glass window and they looked at me. I mean, they knew me enough to know that I hate being told off. It was such a good excuse. They could see my face like popping up in the window going, oh, like such a loser. Like, I can be cool, but not in this area. I'm so...
It's almost like a hypervigilance, isn't it? Where did it come from?
I had a lovely, but quite scary, unpredictable dad. And I never knew why he was cross or moody. And it was quite regular. And there was a lot of like silent treatment type vibe. So it's very toxic. And when you're little, you don't understand it. So I used to try and constantly be working out like, what mood are you in? What's happened? Have I done something? Have I said something? And making sure that I never did or say anything to poke it or to make it worse. So behaving perfectly as much as possible all the time, very acutely aware of other people's energy, almost to the point where when I was little, I such a dick. When I was little, I thought I had a superpower.
In a way, you did. And it's not surprising to me that you went on to do what you do, because the skill of what you do is in being able to know where someone's at and to be able to ask a question. And I imagine you're incredible. I know you are. I've watched you do it. You're incredible at then asking the next question to even help them close up if you're feeling like they're too vulnerable, or open up if you can sense they can go there.
What a lovely thing to observe, because sometimes I think, what the hell do I even do? I had a real crisis of confidence when I hit 40, partly because of people, you know, a person, let's just say, I'm going to dance over that. And then partly, I think, because, you know, it's 40s, is I found it a very reflective time, and not helped by the influence of a certain human being. I just kind of felt like I was a big loser. And I, what have I even done? What am I even doing with my life? Like, I'm not an expert in anything. I'm not. And I remember saying that to someone and they looked at me and I said, I don't know what I'm doing with my life. You know, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a bit. They were like, you're an interviewer. That's what you do. And you're good at it. And I was like, no, I mean, what is that? But I can't tell you. Sorry. I'd been feeling like that probably for, I mean, a good long while before I admitted it to anyone. And just, you know, when you wake up in the morning and you go, the hell am I doing with my life? And I just forgot that I had this skill set. So actually, I can't tell you how much that means to me that you've observed that. That's really kind. Thank you. Because I can do things. It's just, they're quite hard to grasp. You know, I'm not a doctor. I don't have numbers. I have letters after my name, but
I've got two observations on that. The first one is that I think it's a truism of life that the things that come easily and naturally to us, we decide don't have as much value as perhaps the things we have to work really hard for. And I think because it comes naturally to you, I suspect you're like, that's not valuable. Whereas everyone observing you can see how valuable it is. I think the other thing about what you do, and to some extent, maybe being a podcast host, is that it's so invisible, the skill of it. It's so invisible. Like, so many people think, oh, it must be easy hosting a podcast. Actually, it's a real skill to meet someone for the first time. Like, you know, you meet someone for the first time, there's cameras there. You have to make them feel comfortable within seconds and then get them to open up to you. Like, that is really invaluable. But I think because it's invisible and when you're good at it, it just looks easy.
That's so true. Oh my God, just so wise. I really am like eating this all up with a spoon. I'm really loving this chat. So I love filming because there are days that are really, really hard and I'm filming with someone who doesn't want to be filmed with, you know, a farmer in Norfolk and they're bored and they've been pushed in front of the camera. And I think, no, I'm going to win you. You are going to love me by the end of the day. You're going to wish that we never left. I'm going to make this the funnest thing. And I'll ask them about their wife and their kids and they'll be like, oh, I'm in the middle of a divorce. And I'll be like, tell me everything, Jeff. So, you know, it's all the bits in between the film. So by the time we get to have to talk to Brussels sprouts, we're like best friends. And then sometimes I'll get a piece to camera and I'll be like, oh no, I can totally do this better. And it just comes to me like this divine inspiration. And the feeling that I get, and I wish I could put that on a bottle for those days when I feel like I'm such a loser, that feeling of, oh my God, I did that really, really well. And I don't know if everyone on the planet could have just stepped in my shoes. Actually, I think that I really brought something great to that day. I really wish I could put that into like a little pill. And then when those days when I just think, I'm such a loser, what am I even doing? It's important to be reminded of those little moments, isn't it?
100%. Do you know what? When I was early in my career, you talked about this as well, this guy that sort of intervened with you and taught you about manifesting. I had someone who intervened with me and could see maybe that I had some skill and some talents, but I was so low in confidence. She said to me, she said, every time you get an email that says you did a great job on that, or every time you're in a meeting and someone says, Zoe, you did such a good job of hosting that meeting. This is when I was in corporate life. She said, I want you to write it down or print the email and I want you to keep it in a file. And I was like, okay. So, oh my gosh, I've got file like huge. And still to this day, like if a podcast guest sends me an email saying, that was a really great interview, I print it and I put it in so that when I have a wobble, I go back to that file and I haven't got it here. Otherwise I'd hold it up, but I go back to it. I call it a little brag file because we have like so many wobbles affected by my cycle, by what's going on in life. And it's like, can I remember that I know what I'm doing and I can do stuff?
That is such a brilliant idea. It's a gift. I think I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that because I think, oh, it's just a lovely thing to do. I'm going to get my daughter to do that, actually. I mean, I keep all the kids' like certificates and everything like that, and, you know, reports and stuff. But I think that's a really lovely, important practice to go through. And I do think part of my slight kind of, would I say midlife crisis? Yeah, maybe a bit of a personal questioning, was hormonal a bit. I think that my hormones have changed. And I believe, I mean, I haven't had a test, but I believe that I probably started my perimenopause. Because also I was making a program for Channel 5 called Women's Health, Breaking the Taboos. And it was a 4-episode series on like endometriosis. I learned so much. Menopause, perimenopause. But even though I was making that show, I was going through this thing where I was waking up at 4 a.m. every single, well, not started off a few times with like a panic attack. Probably not a panic attack, but I was breathless. It was like palpitations and thinking that I was such a mess. And it was, so it wasn't. Like, I don't have, I'm really careful with money. My friendships have made all my friends know that I adore them. I don't have loads, but the ones I do have, I'm devoted to them. Like, my family loves me. I'm fine. I'm like, my kids love me. I'm fine. But for about 2 years, actually, I had that. And then I was making this program. And even though, and they were getting really bad at that point, they were like, they were all the time. It was affecting my work. I was losing concentration because I was so tired. I was awful, really anxious. And then would bleed into the days. And I was anxious in the days as well for no reason whatsoever. Anyway, so I was making the show, interviewing all of these experts. And I didn't, even then, I didn't put two and two together. And I think about all these women who don't get to do what I do and like, how on earth did they put that picture together? And at the end of one of the interviews, I said to the gynecologist, I said, can I just have you for just a couple of minutes? I said, I am going through this thing and it's getting quite acute now. It's getting quite bad. I think I had cried for the first time about it in bed. And they said, yeah, it's probably progesterone. You probably have a bit of a progesterone depletion. They said, I can give you some supplements. And I've actually recently taken other supplements and lifestyle changes, really militant about my bedtime routine, winding down. telling myself something good and positive, so my subconscious can be calm and I can end a day on a relief. Because your subconscious is like your computer. So if you go to bed freaking out, then you'll probably wake up like that. So I made some changes. White wine is the devil for me. And they've calmed down. I get them every so often, but they've calmed down. But it took me such a long time to realize it was hormonal.